Passions with Michael Barclay.
Eric Knowles will be well known to television viewers of the Antiques Roadshow as the expert on ceramics. You may also have seen him on the Restoration Roadshow and with Sandy Toksvig on Antiques Masters. A new series of Antiques Masters is in the pipeline. Eric worked his way up through the ranks of the auctioneer's Bonhams, starting as a porter and ending up as its head of ceramics, after which he became a full director. As a fellow of the Royal Society of Arts, he's become a leading authority in the fields of European and Oriental ceramics from the 17th to the 20th century. The glass of Tiffany and Lalique and 19th and 20th century decorative arts. His book on Lalique will be published this year. Eric, like me, you're one of these people who are very fortunate in that you're paid to indulge your passion in life.
Yes, I don't play on that too often, but I am always mindful of it.
How did you develop a love of ceramics? Was it simply working in that department, or had you already become very interested?
No, quite simply, it was because I grew up in what was, to all intents and purposes, a very much a working-class environment, and people in my old part of northeast Lancashire didn't have much in the way of oil paintings or silver or whatever, but what they did have was pots. And I just found a fascination with pottery. I mean, my first fascination, I have to say, was with history. And I grew up in the shadow of Pendle Hill, which is an infuriating 1,800-something feet high. In other words, it's not big enough to be Mount Pendle. I'm surrounded by history. I mean, back in, 1612, my area was the talk of the nation because of the discovery of witches. And 19 of the locals were rounded up on charges of witchcraft, and all but one perished either on the gallows, because we didn't burn witches in this country. They did in Scotland, should I say, but not in England. And it was a bit of a shame. The others, you know, some of them died in incarceration in Lancaster Castle. But one was acquitted, and I always say I know that for a fact, because she taught me maths in the 1960s.
Now, your first music relates not only to the Antiques Roadshow, but also, because it's almost exactly contemporaneous, with the setting up of the Meissen Ceramics Factory in, early 18th century?
It is Bach, and it is the Brandenburg Concerto. It's number 3. And it was in the early days when I joined the Antiques Roadshow in 1981. This was the theme music. But the connection really is with the Germany of the time, because, of course, you know, you've got Prussia, you've got Saxony. And it was Saxony, really, where the action was happening, because you've got Augustus the Strong, the King of Poland and the Elector of Saxony. And he is a potaholic. He loves pots. And the Meissen situation came about because there was a man called Johann Friedrich Bertger, who was interested in alchemy. And he had a party trick that went wrong because he told people that he could transmute base metal into gold. And he performed this in front of a few close friends. Well, they weren't very close. But he managed to put in silver coins into a crucible, heated the metal, and it came out gold. Well, of course, you know, anybody can do this. You know, it's the goose laying the golden egg, isn't it? Bertger decided that he was not going to be able to perform this party trick twice. And he made a dash for it. And he made a dash into Saxony. And he ended up basically being put in prison. And was told he could come out when he could transmute base metal into gold. Couldn't do it, obviously not. But he was working with another alchemist called Schönhausen, who was his mentor. And Schönhausen was the man who was trying to perfect porcelain. Porcelain was, in actual fact, white gold. Because at that time, and we're talking around about 1708, 1709, in the West, we did not have the formula for making true porcelain. Now, true porcelain, you're talking Chinese. And so it was every wish for of every Renaissance prince, whatever, to have his own porcelain factory. The Medicis tried, didn't really work. And because Augustus the Strong is completely crazy about pots, he's keen to invest in this man. So eventually, come about 1710, Schönhausen had died by then, Bürger comes up with a formula. And eventually they moved to the Albrechtsburg in Meissen. But it doesn't have a happy ending because eventually, you know, his health deteriorated. And although he is credited with giving this wonderful hard-paste porcelain, which is the same as the Chinese, he basically ended up going bonkers. And of course, I mean, every prince of that particular part of the world would have had his own choir, his own Kapellmeister, his own silversmith. It seems a bit of a contrast, doesn't it? The fact that they could be quite sort of gruesome characters, and yet they embrace the arts.
Thank you.
It's impossible not to kind of move to that music, isn't it?
I think music is the nearest thing to time travel. I mean, I've got that sort of imagination that will take me back.
We heard the first movement of the Bach Brandenburg Concerto No. 3 in G, BWV 1048, the Academy of St. Martin in the Fields, directed by Neville Marriner. I think next, Eric Knowles, we're going to really marry your profession and mine, because the piece of music actually reminds you of specific pots, partially because of where they came from and how they got there.
Well, that's right. We're looking at Borodin and we're looking at in the steppes of Central Asia. And of course, we're thinking, in my case, Chinese porcelain. I mean, initially, in the early days, it would have come across that part of the world in a caravan. In later years, of course, they came by ship. In fact, I brought a piece along today for your delectation, Michael. And in all fairness, this would have probably come by ship. Chinese porcelain, it had sort of magical properties. When Marco Polo went out to China and came back with this porcelain, it was considered to be just magical because we did not have the technique to make this wonderful sort of semi-translucent white porcelain that could withstand boiling water. See, soft-paste porcelain couldn't. So if you've got an early Derby teapot, do not put hot water in it, boiling water in it. You've always, with your teapots, you've always got to put tepid water in there and heat it up. That's why we get this ridiculous business today of warming the pot before you put your boiling water in. But getting to, let me show you this. Can I show you this little treasure?
Please, please, it's absolutely stunning.
It's a footed bowl. It's blue and white. It is about 10 inches in diameter. And on the exterior, painted in lovely soft cobalt blues, are basically you've got Taoist immortals. And the secret in actually determining the age of this is in the quality of the porcelain and the use of the blues. Because over the centuries, they changed. If this was from the time of Marco Polo, it would have been a more violet blue than it is, because that was a blue called a Mohammedan blue, which was coming from the Middle East. It was being imported into China. And this particular bowl is also, if you look on the interior, it's got a character within a ornamental garden in a central roundel. And
as if that were not enough, there's the most beautiful intricate decoration around the inner rim, isn't there?
Yes, it's got a lattice band, a very elaborate lattice band on that rim. And it's this quality of decoration that tells you that this is, well, in actual fact, this dates to around about 1690. Because this is very early Qing porcelain. Before then, you had the Ming dynasty. But in the 1680s, there were problems. There was the overthrow of the Ming by the Qing. The Qing, of course, were the Mongolians coming down from the north.
Well, as we listen to the Borodin, we can savour the feel and the look of that beautiful piece.
Thank you. I don't know about you, but I actually see that camel train. I could see them setting off at sunrise first thing.
Bearing all these lovely pots for your pleasure.
Yeah. Yes, if I could time travel and I could just get into those panniers that would have been on those camels, yeah, I'd have a field day.
In the Steppes of Central Asia by Borodin, the Orchestra de la Suisse Romande, conducted by Ernest Ansemé. What was the kind of music, Eric Knowles, that you were hearing when you were young, that your parents played, for example?
Well, initially it was anything that was on the radio. I think the light programme would have been on more than anything else. The tipping point was probably around about 1965 when my parents went out and bought a Dansett radio. Not just radio, but record player. And not just any old Dansett. This had a Garrard turntable. Not the Monarch, you understand, the Garrard turntable. And they went out to the local co-op and they came home one day with about a dozen different albums. Bach figured in there, Beethoven figured, and of course, dare I say, Rimsky-Korsakov figured. My parents quite often would take us to Manchester to listen to the Halle Orchestra and watch them with the great Sir John Barbarolli. To be frank with you, I think my brother and I endured a certain amount, but we did enjoy the Viennese evenings because you could swing and sway.
You've chosen Rimsky's Scheherazade. Which part of it particularly appeals to you?
Well, I love all of it. I mean, you know, it's rather like saying, which chapter of this book do you like best? You've got to take them all as they are. And I know the third movement is instantly recognisable. And forgive me if everybody knows it. I don't really care. It's uplifting music. It's an uplifting painting.
You said that about the Bach too, didn't you?
Well, it is. And it does touch you from a, you know, a spiritual point of view. I don't want to get profound about this at all. But in this day and age, there isn't that much that has this effect on me. But Rimsky-Korsakov, I mean, this is picture music.
Thank you. The Young Prince and Princess from Scheherazade, the third movement, by Rimsky-Korsakov. The New York Philharmonic Orchestra, conducted by Leonard Bernstein. Because the funny thing is, Eric Nelson, I'm sure this is true of you in your profession, that I listen to something like Rimsky-Korsakov and I can hear the fledgling Stravinsky in there because, you know, the influence is passed on, and in the Stravinsky ballets there are little bits like the use of the horn. And it's probably true with you when you're looking at Potts and think you see the influence of a previous generation.
Oh, yeah, that's very true. Especially when talking Potts, you see the influence of silversmiths. Going back to Meissen, a lot of the shapes there were designed for the vases by a man called Erminger, who was the court silversmith there. And then when you get into the French and Sèvres, and before that Vincennes, you've got a man called Duplessis, who's a metal worker, and he is the unsung hero of Sèvres porcelain, because, you know, here's this brand new material, really, because the difference being, and I don't want to make this a history lesson, but whereas the Germans had invented hard paste porcelain, a true porcelain, the French were busy using something called soft paste porcelain. To all intents and purposes, it looked like the same material, but it wasn't as hard, quite literally, as the other. And it's an interesting time because you've got people like Duplessis using this new material and making the most wonderful, elaborate porcelain vases. I mean, it's really a bold step into the unknown. And I could go on for hours about this because, you know, I mean, add to that, you've got the chemists who are coming up with new colours. And then another unsung hero would be the gilders, who are doing, you know, wonderful things on porcelain. So, yes, you're forever seeing influences all the way through, even from classical period into the 20th century.
The next music is by Prokofiev, but what I like about this is you've given it a northern lilt, haven't you?
Well, yes, I try not to play the token northerner. I mean, having been on the road show all these years, I jest that I went to the Fred Dibner School of Elocution and then ended up, much like yourself, Michael, at the Russell Harty Finishing School. Yeah. I have to say that growing up in that part of the world, certainly when it came to the local gala and Nelson, you know, agricultural show or whatever, you would have no shortage of brass bands. The funny thing is about Prokofiev, and it's a bit like writers, you know, I will find a writer like, I don't know, it could be Hardy, or it could be, you know, present day I'm reading everything by C.J. Sansom. So I tend to go off and overindulge. And it was true with Prokofiev, because I think, again, I'd been conditioned, even before the Dansette record player had arrived, by virtue of being one of those children who watched TV in black and white. And if it was Desmond Morris, it was Zoo Time. And if it was Zoo Time, the opening music was Peter and the Wolf. And if it was Peter and the Wolf, it's Prokofiev. And not only Peter and the Wolf, but when I heard his classical symphony, the first time I heard it, I didn't know it was Prokofiev. I was convinced it was going to be Haydn or somebody like that. It was so. No, that's 18th century. I know an 18th century pot when I see one, and I know an 18th century piece of music when I hear it. But certainly with the Lieutenant Kijay suite, I have to say that there is an orchestral version of The Wedding, but you see, it's a hard choice, you know. Doing this programme, I have to tell you now, is hard work. The hard work is not now, it's before, and it's choosing, you see, because, I mean, I love Troika. Doesn't everybody love Troika? I mean, Troika for me is instant Christmas. This is the Russians doing a Will Hay. This is Ealing comedy. The fact that Kijay never existed, that he's invented by some clerk, and the fact that the Tsar gets wind of this man and is interested, they've got to play along. So much so that the Tsar's being given reports about what Kijay's been doing. And so it came as a great relief, I think, to all concerned when they killed him off. So you'd get the funeral as well. But I wanted something that little bit more uplifting. Again, I use the word. And certainly The Wedding, for me, it's just got everything. I just love The Wedding.
Thank you.
I've got to say that the music I've chosen, these are my friends through this journey in life, and they're very good for grounding you. They're always there. They never complain. I couldn't help but think, well, listening to the music then, it would have been wonderful music for Wallace and Gromit.
Quite true. Well, that was The Wedding from Lieutenant Kijet and that brass arrangement for Empire Brass and the composer Prokofiev. You've been talking about areas and the feeling that that gives to you, and certainly this next piece is almost synonymous with countryside, isn't it, and countryside pursuits.
Well, it is. My other great friend outside music is the countryside. I was very fortunate that, again, I grew up in that part of northeast Lancashire where within, you know, 10 minutes of my home was the countryside. And I was interested at a very early age in birds. The first time I saw a lapwing, this exotic bird with a plume on its head, and my mother said, that bird has come all the way from Africa to be in this field up here in Lancashire. And that inspired me. I mean, today I wake up to the sound of another bird above my bedroom window. And fortunately, I live in the Chilterns, as I've got red kites. And I've got one that sits in a tree opposite me, and they are magnificent birds. So the countryside for me is, again, it's the great escape.
And Beethoven manages to conjure up that.
Oh, he does, doesn't he? I mean, again, we're talking picture music, aren't we? And when I listen, you know, to the sixth, the pastoral, I love listening to pastoral music because it's meditative. And certainly when you listen to the sixth and the opening, the first movement, pleasant feelings upon arrival in the countryside. Yeah. I feel that when I wake up in the Lake District or the Yorkshire Dales or my old part of Pendleside. And that gives me such a buzz. I can't begin to tell you. Thank you.
The first movement of Beethoven's Pastoral Symphony, the Symphony No. 6 in F, Opus 68. We heard the New York Philharmonic Orchestra conducted by Leonard Bernstein. Now, Eric, you've already shown me a beautiful piece of early 18th century Chinese porcelain, but you've also brought along some glass, and I must say it's absolutely ravishing. I imagine this reflects your passion for Lalique. In fact, you're just written a book on Lalique, I know that.
Well, yes, if I can describe it. It's actually described by Lalique themselves as a champagne flute, although it's quite a wide champagne flute. Now, I have to say that it's actually a design not by René Jules Lalique, but by his son, Marc Lalique. And it's a wonderful, wonderful wine glass insofar as, or champagne glass, it has the upper part of the stem, the face of an angel, all frosted. And then engraved into the actual bowl are these wonderful wings.
It's quite modern in a way, isn't it?
Well, it is. I think this was designed probably in around about 1950 or thereabouts.
I must say, looking at those wings and the beautiful way in which they come from the glass, I'm thinking French music now. I'm thinking sinuous, fluid French music.
Really? You should be thinking of French cathedrals, because the influence, if you will, for this was an angel in Reims Cathedral, and that's where René Lalique's mother came from, that part of the world. But yes, when it comes to music and movement and that period, Lalique, for his part, was, of course, a great jeweller in the Art Nouveau period. And he turned his attention to glass and in the early part of the 20th century, 1907. And, you know, when you're looking for movement in a musical idiom, well, you know, I love the people who were around him at that time. I love the Eric Sarties, but I do love Debussy. I do think of people like Lalique as being the impressionist in a solid material, whereas, of course, I think of Monet as the great master when it comes to paint. And then to put it into its musical context, well, does anybody do it better than Debussy?
Thank you.
Gordon Fergus Thompson sipped champagne from the Lalique glass there as he played Debussy's Arabesque number one. Well, finally, Eric Knowles, we're going to play you out on a piece that I think probably stems back from your teenage years, but which you still have a passion for.
Well, I do. I have to say that by the time I got sort of 15 years of age, I was interested in discos. I was interested in music that could get your feet moving. And
well, we began with Bach. Let's finish with
Four
Tops.
The Four Tops. And very difficult to actually, you know, isolate a particular piece of music. Of all the pieces I could have chosen, you know, that had a dance beat, I've actually gone for a ballad. And it features the voice of Levi Stubbs, a voice which still mesmerises me. There's an honesty. It's a great lyric. And on top of that, just listen to the backing vocals. It doesn't get much better than this. They are simply magical.
Eric Knowles, thank you so much for sharing your musical choices and also for sharing these lovely pieces of Porcelain and Lalique. And we look forward very much to the new series of Antiques Masters. Thanks again.
Thank you for asking me, Michael.
When you feel that you can make it all alone, remember no one is big enough to go it alone. Just ask the lonely, they know the hurt and pain of losing a love you can never regain. Just ask the lonely. The young and foolish laugh at love and slowly run away, confident and sure that fate will bring another love their way.
Four Tops with Ask the Lonely. That was the final choice of Eric Knowles, who was Michael Barclay's guest today. Next Sunday, at the same time, Michael's guest on Private Passions will be the actor Olivia Williams. Private Passions is a Classic Arts production for Radio 3, and today's edition was produced by Chris Marshall.
Gustav Holst found himself famous when the world rapidly put the Planets on its list of concert favourites, but few men have been less comfortable with their celebrity status. He spent the rest of his life striving towards another work that would displace the Planets from the top of his charts. Well, this week I'll be looking at some of those attempts in his operas and ballets, with a glimpse of a planet or two as the world first heard them. Join me, Donald MacLeod, for Gustav Holst as Composer of the Week every weekday at 12 noon and 10 in the evening.
And on BBC4 television this evening, there's a documentary film by Tony Palmer on Gustav Holst. In the Bleak Midwinter is at 9 o'clock this evening over on BBC4 television. Well, coming up at 4 o'clock this afternoon, solemn choral evening prayer live from Liverpool Metropolitan Cathedral with music by Bird, Stanford and Tournemere. That's here on BBC Radio 3. We're on 90 to 93 FM, on digital radio and online. The time now is 1 o'clock, time for the news with David Cornett.
The deputy leader of the Liberal Democrats, Simon Hughes, says he wants the Electoral Commission to investigate what he calls the untruths made by the No campaign in the referendum on changing the voting system. He backed Nick Clegg, who's accused opponents of the alternative vote system, of deceit. The Foreign Secretary, William Hague, said the disagreement wouldn't affect the coalition. The Foreign Office is urging British people living in Syria to leave the country because of the worsening security situation there, unless they have a pressing need to stay. It said they should go while commercial flights were still operating. More than 100 protesters demanding political change are reported to have been killed by the security forces over the past 2 days. Police in Northern Ireland have found more bomb-making equipment near the Irish border in South Armagh. They made the discovery last night, just hours after another find in the same area. The security operation is being linked to alleged dissident Republican activity. An extra 1,000 police officers are on the streets of Glasgow for the football match between Celtic and Rangers this lunchtime. There's been added tension surrounding the Old Firm game since it was revealed that Celtic's manager, Neil Lennon, and two other prominent supporters of the club had been sent parcel bombs. The Pope has called for the international community to use diplomacy and dialogue instead of arms in Libya. Speaking during his Easter message to the faithful at the Vatican, he also said he was praying for human dignity to overcome what he called the darkness of division in the Middle East. Police in China have detained at least 20 people to prevent members of a Christian church holding an Easter service in Beijing. The Shuwang Church has been banned by the authorities and its leaders are under house arrest. It's thought there are 70 million worshippers in underground churches in China. And the weather, much of England and Wales will be warm again, but with a risk of thundery showers in the southeast. Scotland and Northern Ireland will be cool and largely cloudy. BBC News and Weather at 2 minutes past one.
Read by David Cornett. I'm Jill Anderson. Very good afternoon to you. In an hour's time at 2 o'clock, Chichi Nwanuku will be here with Radio 3 Requests. But now it's time for today's early music show with Lucy Skeeping. And her subject today is an oratorio written for Easter Sunday in Rome in 1708.
Thank you. welcome to the show. And it's all about Handel today, so lots of great music guaranteed. You may know that in the early 18th century, Handel settled in London to become the capital's leading opera composer, and that he then turned his attention to writing oratorios, wonderful, memorable works like Solomon, Saul, and, of course, Messiah, which, even without all the costumes and razzmatazz of the theatre, could be as dramatic and moving as anything seen on the stage. But in fact, in his youth, before he came to London, Handel had already written a couple of oratorios. And in today's programme, we're going to be exploring the second of the two, which was performed to great acclaim in Rome during Holy Week. It's often known as his Easter Oratorio, and we've just heard its introductory sonata. But its full name is La Resurrezione di Nostro Signor Gesù Cristo, the Resurrection of Our Lord Jesus Christ.